You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Mint Theater has developed an outstanding reputation for unearthing forgotten plays from the past that still deserve to be seen. And their latest, a 1917 play by Ferenc Molnár called Fashions for Men, is pretty amazing. It involves the romantic imbroglios in a high-class haberdashery in Budapest, and it has one of the most complicated plots I've seen in a play in a long time. I'm really pleased that it brings Jonathan Banks, the Mint's producing artistic director, back to our show, along with Rachel Napoleon, who plays Paula, a clerk at the store, and Kurt Rhodes, who stars as the Count. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I'm always amazed at how you uncover these plays from long ago. How familiar were you with Molnár's work? He was the most popular European playwright with Americans in the 20s.
Absolutely, he was. And I had two big volumes of his plays on my shelves. And this was one that, just looking through a table of contents, I just thought, well, that title sounds interesting to me. We were just talking, it's not a particularly good translation of the Hungarian Uri Divat. It's not Fashions for Men. It's Fashions for Men and Women in this particular shop. But I read it. I loved it. It was one of those plays that I had read once and decided immediately I would one day produce.
It's quite different from his most famous play, Lilium, which most Americans know as Carousel.
Right, right. His range is really interesting. It's very different from Lilium, certainly.
Were there other important Hungarian playwrights at the time?
You know, it's a good question. When I began doing some research into this, there was an article in the New York Times in the 20s, a huge piece about the Hungarian invasion. And there were 36 plays on Broadway in, 1926, 1927 from six or seven different Hungarian playwrights.
What made him so popular?
Well, it's funny because I think this article put forward the case that in Hungary he was considered the least of these six or seven. And I think considered the least, in fact, because he was so popular. You know, it doesn't do an artist a lot of good to be too popular.
Maybe I should invite these two actors to do the difficult and explain the basic plot.
Ooh.
You want to start, Rachel?
Sure. So I guess the basic plot is it takes place in a haberdashery.
For men and women.
For men and women, yes, and not necessarily the aristocrats. And it's run by this amazing man, Peter Juhas, who, is not someone that you necessarily see every day. He's just the nicest and, believes the best in people.
Which makes him not the best businessman.
Exactly. He lets people, not pay for things and they can rack up a bill. And so in the first 20 minutes of the play, we find out that his wife is going to be leaving him. For his basically his best friend and his best salesperson, Oscar. And then we find out that not only is she leaving him, but she also has run him into bankruptcy and has lost basically all of his money. And
I'm going to interject along the way, with every stroke of bad news, Juhas is not upset at all. I mean, he is upset, but he's not spiteful. He's like, oh, well, you must have a good reason.
Right.
Oh, well, I understand. That happens to everybody.
And both of your characters are people who basically like him,
and
yet you take advantage of him as well.
Yeah, well, when he loses his business, I give him a chance to work in my as the general manager at my cheese factory, which I'm the Count, and I have a cheese factory obsessed with cheese, which is always a good plot point. And but I'm also obsessed with the young shop girl that's in his shop that Rachel plays. And so I offer him a job, but he is so protective of her that he's in my way. So there's a lot of comedy of him trying to stop my amorous.
And a lot of this is also about the class. And Rachel, you see the Count's attentions as a chance for you to move up in society.
Absolutely. I mean, Paula uses Mr. Juhas as well. She uses his goodness and his fondness for her as a way to get to the cheese factory and get as close to the count as possible.
This is a time in what was called Middle Europe when things were in transition, and the royalty didn't have the same kind of clout mm-hmm. that it had. And then, of course, World War One changed it even more.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is we have no mention of the political landscape in our play. Yeah. I mean, it's written in, is it 1917?
Well, it's fascinating because
it's during the war. And the Austro-Hungarian Empire is suffering at that moment.
In fact, Molnar himself was a war correspondent. 6 months before crafting this comedy, he was on the front reporting, and his reports were run worldwide, including in the New York Times. And our director, Davis McCallum, has referred to the play right from the start as kind of a snow globe world where they're... So it was written in 17. It was first done in New York in 21, but it's either timeless or of another time.
Well, people looking at the title and hearing a little bit about the play might assume that it's similar to Miklos Laszlo's Shop Around the Corner, but this play was first.
Yes, and we hear that every night, and absolutely. But this play was first. There's... Davis put in a little nod to Little Shop Around the Corner. There's packages are delivered at the end of the first act from a toy store, and he made the label on the boxes Laszlo.
Uh-huh. Miklos Laszlo actually study with Molnar or know him on some level?
I don't know that. If I believe you, though.
Now, the two of you are playing characters of another time, wearing costumes of that time.
Yeah.
How much research do you have to do to get into these roles?
Well, the fun... You guys went to a clothing store.
We did.
Store, very high-end that was...
We went to St. Laurie's, which was this great, amazing tailor-made shop. They make these beautiful suits. So we got to go there and see what that was like and how the business people, the salespeople talk to their customers. And it was the best part was actually going behind the scenes and into the factory and seeing the people who, you know, sew the buttons on and their kind of rapport with one another.
And it's really
similar
nice
to the way it was in 1917?
Oh, well, yeah, there's just like... kind of like not necessarily stock characters, but you know, there'd be moments where we'd be like, oh, this character Philip is like Umberto, who we met at St. Laurie's, who just, you know, kind of shared a knowing look.
As it happens, that's a shop that's 101 years old, so there really is a connection.
Yeah.
And Kurt, you're playing the Duke. There are fewer Dukes these days.
The Count. And
Counts, I'm sorry. But isn't it, you can play him kind of like a tech millionaire or a TV show star.
Yeah, well, it's fun playing in a show about fashion and clothes, playing the richest person because you really get to look great. And so, I have some nice duds. Then we go to the Cheese Factory. I'm a little more rustic, but even then it's kind of an outfit fresh from a hunt with on the horseback. But
Molnar is kind of tough on the Count, showing his narcissism and spinelessness, yet he's kind of appealing, a funny guy. You had to balance the two?
He's hard on the Count in that I don't really get what I want. But the battle along the way, I think, is written pretty lovingly. I mean, he's lots of humor and yet lots of... The fun thing about Molnar is that he, Molnar, that's not the correct pronunciation. But
Molnar.
Oh, thank you. And, but he,
I was worried whether I should say Budapest or Budapest. There's somebody out there who's going to give me a hard time.
That's right.
Either way.
Molnar and I think it's a Hungarian thing, too. Things aren't straight line. There's a lot of, it can be a passionate thing, but also very funny and sad. There's a lot of competing emotions in any given moment, which makes him really fun to play.
Well, wouldn't you say that all of the characters in this play have obvious flaws? The shopkeeper is naive to an absurd point. His workers are deceitful and uncaring about his situation, and yet We also see their good sides.
Oh, yeah. I think, at the end, they can only, in the case of Juhasz, he can only really exist in the snow globe with someone else who sees his flaws and can kind of help him stay on the right track.
Well, we keep on changing our opinion about your character.
Right, which is like probably the hardest thing for me when I was reading it. I was like, ooh.
I'm nice, I'm not nice.
Yeah.
I'm not so nice.
Right.
Again.
But that's the journey, the complexity of the characters mm-hmm. and the affection with which Molnar treats them all is what makes the play so complicated and a pleasure to watch.
Part of the tension of the play comes from not just anticipating what will happen to the characters, whether or not we'll get happy endings, but also whether they deserve good things to happen to them.
Well, I think that through the course of the play, Rachel was talking about, Juhasz is so good-natured and so... we're waiting for him to kind of grow a backbone and show his temper and learn to be cynical and learn to stand up for himself. But that's a complicated thing, to find yourself rooting for somebody to be less nice. Mm-hmm. And less kind and less compassionate. And the play, rewards our attention.
Didn't Eleanor Parker say that when she saw it that she just wanted to get up there and slap that actor playing Juhasz?
Well, she did, Dorothy Parker.
Dorothy Parker.
And I know Alexander Wolcott writing in the New York Times said, in the New Yorker, wanting him to fall down and break his leg.
Didn't you rewrite some of the dialogue?
Well... the dialogue was written in Hungarian, so we
obviously... So you did a translation.
So there's a translation.
Mm-hmm. There's a great-grandson, isn't there?
There is a great-grandson, right. So there is a translation by Benjamin Glazer from 1921, and Glazer also translated Lilliome in the only version that's ever been performed. And I did go through his translation and smooth it out. And in a number of instances... I took the original Hungarian text and I wrote to Gábor Lukin out in Los Angeles and said, Gábor, I think something's missing here in my English version. Would you? And, he'd tap back on his iPhone and send me a quick rough draft of, and I'd say, oh, that's right, that scene's missing or that speech is missing. And in fact, Paula's character is a lot tougher, I think, in our version than in Glazer's. But it's just more accurate to the Molnár.
And you translated from the Hungarian?
No, Gábor translated from the Hungarian, and I worked from the English translation by Glazer.
Rachel, the actors have to do all sorts of things. You had to actually handle the clothes. You could probably go to work at a clothing store now after having folded all of these things.
Oh, certainly. I'm sure I could. I probably will soon. Who knows?
Better than working as a waitress, right?
It's very true.
No, but these are the things actors don't expect to have to deal with when they take a role.
Right, the cheese cutting. We've been cheese punning backstage.
So many cheese puns.
Yes. There was a lot of attention, actually, though, put on handling, making mm-hmm. sure that the props were handled with the kind of care that's appropriate for their quality.
Right.
This is a far cry from when you played Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes, it is. It's a delightful distance from that, or from Shakespeare too. But it's got a lot of classical, needs a lot of energy, and yet the moments of I've taken the Count as a guy that really wants to fall in love, and it's not. Just this kind of pantalone, lecherous old man. But he's got a point of view. I think Molnár writes him too lovingly to make him just a stock guy.
Mm. Aren't you doing a one-man show soon called An Iliad?
An Iliad, based on Homer and adapted by Dennis O'Hare and Lisa Peterson. Yeah, it's a one-man telling of just a small scope show, just about the Trojan War. So, yeah, a little daunting. I'm already trying to... put some of that in the head.
And Rachel, this marks both your off-Broadway and Mint Theater debut.
Yes, it does.
But you have some pretty good credits recently.
So Williamstown?
I
was at Williamstown this past summer, and this is kind of like my first introduction to to New York, and I'm
well, there's
very
the New
thankful.
York Fringe, wasn't there?
I did do a show in the Fringe 2 summers before, but this is my, I guess.
Now, Jonathan, you also did a special presentation of Molnar's letters, articles, and unpublished writings this past Monday. Do you feel that even though he was really famous at one point, that he needs to become better known again?
Absolutely. He's known today to the extent that he's known at all, really, as the author of Carousel, which he's not.
He didn't write any of those songs.
No, he didn't write any of those songs. There's a fun story about that where years earlier Puccini approached him about making an opera out of Lilium, and he said, no, I really want the play to be remembered as the play by Molnar and not the opera by Puccini.
He did have some good fans, Brecht, Pirandello, among others.
He did. He had, as you said, he was Europe's most well-known playwright in America.
What's coming up for the Mint beyond April 12th after this run?
Well, at the end of April, we have our annual benefit where we're going to be revealing some secrets about the future. Our next production won't be until August.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to tell us what it is.
I'm not going to tell you what it is.
But is it very old?
It is exactly 100 years old and quite wonderful. One of the funniest plays we've ever done.
And this one is only 98 years old.
That's right. Mm.
just a kid. Jonathan Banks is the producing artistic director of the Mint Theater. Rachel Napoleon plays Paula, and Kurt Rhodes plays the Count in the revival of Ferenc Molnar's Fashions for Men, which has been extended to April 12th. It's, of course, at this wonderful theater at 311 West 43rd Street. For ticket information, you go to our show page at WNYC.org.